Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and this is the Sunday Roundup. Yesterday, the government updated its rules on foreign travel to mandate that anybody returning to the UK from Spain must self-isolate for 14 days. The new guidance reflects the discovery of nearly 1,000 new coronavirus cases in Spain on Friday, prompting fears of a second wave in the country. Sophie Ridge interviewed the Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab, and asked him to justify the government's speedy decision.
Why was the decision taken with so little notice?
Well, because the cases in Spain, the data we got was on the Friday. You obviously compile that through the course of the day. It showed a big jump right across mainland Spain. That was then assessed yesterday afternoon, and we took the decision as swiftly as we could. And look, we can't make apologies for doing so. We must be able to take swift, decisive action, particularly in relation to localised or internationally in relation to Spain, a particular country, where we see we must take action. Otherwise, we risk reinfection into the UK, potentially a second wave here, and then another lockdown. So, yes, I understand it is disruptive for those who are going through this, who are in Spain or who've been considering going to Spain. We must be able to take swift, decisive action to protect the UK because we've made such progress getting the virus down and to prevent the virus retaking hold in the UK.
I don't think anyone would debate the need to take fast action, swift action on this. But at the same time, it really was pretty quick. So the Foreign Office travel advice, for example, at 8 p.m. last night said this, that Spain was on the list of countries that British people could travel to. These countries and territories have been assessed as no longer presenting an unacceptably high risk to British people travelling abroad. Spain is exempt from the Foreign Office advice against all non-essential international travel. 8 p.m. on Saturday. Would it not have been useful to at least flag to people that this was something under consideration? A lot of people travel on Saturday.
No, sorry, that's just not right. We must be able to gauge the data in real time, which we did, the data coming through on Friday, and then take decisive action. If we suddenly say, actually, we're not quite sure, or we give vague advice, it would create more uncertainty. So, look, I know, and there's a cut-off with changes in rules or advice that we give, so I appreciate that that's difficult and it can be disruptive, but it would be far worse either to muddy the waters or to hold back and delay from taking the measures when we need to take them.
Ridge put it to Raab that the government's call for employers to be understanding of employees undergoing the quarantine procedure left a lot to be desired.
The Department of Transport is asking employers to be understanding of people who need to quarantine for 2 weeks through no fault of their own. I mean, it sounds a little bit like you're just asking nicely, hoping for the best. Don't you need to be a little bit more forceful than that?
Oh, look, we're changing the rules. The law is changed in relation to holiday makers and travellers. And, of course, we expect that employers show those employees who will have to quarantine because of the law the flexibility they need.
But what if you don't have an understanding employer? If you have an understanding employer, that's totally fine, but not everyone does. I mean, that's what we saw in Leicester, isn't it? You know, frankly, when you were hoping that employers would do the right thing, some businesses in Leicester were clearly not enforcing the social distancing rules, and that led to a spike in infection. What if you don't have an understanding employer?
Well, look, employers, just like employees, have got to follow the law, and I don't think you could be laying people off or taking penalties against people for adhering to the law.
I don't think we're talking about laying people off. I think we're talking about not paying people if you're on a zero-hours contract, not giving them work.
If someone has followed the law in relation to quarantine and self-isolating the way they should, they can't have penalties taken against them.
Well, you could be put on £92 six pay, couldn't you, a week, rather than getting paid leave.
You could not be
given work if you're on a zero-hours contract.
Sophie, you cannot be penalised in this country lawfully for following the rules and the law that's in place. And obviously, we expect employers to respond flexibly and in an understanding way to those who have, let's face it, had enforced on them because of the risk that we've seen in Spain, those quarantine rules.
Ridge also inquired about the predicament of the Transport Secretary, Grant Shapps, who has been holidaying in Spain himself and is still there.
What was your reaction when you heard that the Transport Secretary had been trapped by his own quarantine?
I think it shows you the risk for everyone. I spoke to Grant Shapps yesterday afternoon, and it shows you that we've got swift measures that we can put in place responding to real time.
What mood was he in?
I think, look, like anyone, I think he empathised with many other people going through that, but he recognised, of course, and we as the decision makers recognise that we have to take these measures to protect the country. And as we come through the easing of the lockdown, we've always said, when you look at the strategy, you look at what we said all along, we need to be able to take targeted measures when there's a flare-up in the virus. And being able to do it in a localised way stops us having to do it in a nationwide way.
When did Grant Shapps travel to Spain?
I don't know.
You don't know. So you don't know if he knew this was coming? I mean, it's one way to avoid media interviews, I guess. 2 weeks in quarantine.
I'm pretty sure he didn't do it for that purpose, but you'd need to ask Grant about his travel plans.
OK.
Meanwhile, the director of the Test and Trace programme, Dido Harding, told Times Radio's G&T show that the government planned to introduce on-the-spot tests at airports for returning Brits home from holidays is not clinically possible.
Unfortunately, although we'd love it to be true that if you have a test today, we can be confident in saying that you are not infectious and about to come down with the disease, that's not the way the virus works. So a test today is only as good as saying you haven't got the disease today. And the incubation period can be quite a long time. Which is why if you've been in a very high-risk environment, and right now the judgment of our scientists and clinicians is that Spain is a high-risk environment, we need you to isolate for 14 days because you might test negative today and test positive tomorrow or the next day, right up to the end of that 14-day period.
The Shadow Health Secretary, Jonathan Ashworth, was highly critical of the government's implementation of the 14-day quarantine policy.
So I understand why they've made the decision, but of course the way in which this decision has been made in the last 24 hours is frankly shambolic. There are holidaymakers in Spain at the moment, confused and distressed. There are people about to go on holiday to Spain and the islands like Tenerife who are confused, and they don't know whether their employers will allow them to take 2 weeks quarantine. The government just say, oh, we hope that employers cooperate. Well, you know, to be frank, I hope that I'll win the lottery on Saturday. It doesn't mean it's going to happen. We need clarity from government now as to whether those who are asked to quarantine, whether they'll get financial support if their employers refuse it them. And we need clarity around, clarity for those holidaymakers who are currently in Spain, who have probably saved up all year for their family holiday, who are confused and distressed. And this is probably the way in which this decision has been communicated is obviously causing anxiety.
Ridge asked Ashworth for his opinion on Keir Starmer's decision to award damages to 7 ex-Labour staffers who appeared in an edition of the BBC's Panorama, speaking about their experience of anti-Semitism in the party. Former leader Jeremy Corbyn has criticised the response.
OK, now, Jeremy Corbyn has described the Labour Party's decision this week to pay substantial damages to 7 anti-Semitism whistleblowers as disappointing and a political decision, not a legal one. Is he right, and is this helping Labour rebuild trust with the Jewish community?
I think Keir Starmer has shown exceptional leadership in dealing with this poison of anti-Semitism, which was allowed to go unchallenged for too long in the Labour Party. I entirely support the decision that Keir Starmer and our General Secretary of the Labour Party made last week. There can be zero tolerance for anti-Semitism in the Labour Party. And that, yes, that means changing our procedures on strengthening our procedures, but that also means changing the culture in our party, where anti-Semitism claims and accusations were too readily dismissed as smears or not taken seriously, or opinions were allowed to go unchallenged in our online discourse, sometimes even in our local constituency meetings. This is changing, and as Keir Starmer said in the House of Commons, the Labour Party is under new leadership in that respect. Now, I have great fondness for Jeremy Corbyn. I served in his shadow cabinet as his shadow health secretary, and I'm very proud to have served in the shadow cabinet for many years now. But on this particular question, I think Keir Starmer has done the correct thing last week, and we will continue to do more to stamp out anti-Semitism in our party and challenge it whenever we come across it.
Ridge also hosted a pre-recorded interview with Tony Blair and asked him for his thoughts on the recently released report into Russian interference in the UK's democratic processes.
We live in a new world today where cybersecurity is going to be a massive, massive question for governments. And, you know, there are governments who want to weaken the West. We know, you know, basically why they want to do it. You've just got to make sure that they're all the time constrained.
You say there that you aren't sure if the government took its eye off the ball or decided not to look at the ball. It felt like you were referring perhaps to the EU referendum, to the suggestion that no effort was made to investigate whether Russia tried to interfere in that referendum. Yeah.
You can investigate it without believing that, you know, the reason we got Brexit. Look, I'm anti-Brexit, as you know, but I don't believe
that. We know that, don't worry.
Yeah, but I don't believe
that's come through.
The referendum result was because of Russian interference. That would be foolish in my view. But you should know, and the government should investigate for the future at any rate.
So there should be an investigation, you think?
Well, I think it would be sensible to investigate what has happened, but really the most important thing is to create the capacity for the future to make sure that you know what's going on in your democratic politics. Because this interference, and it's only one aspect of cybersecurity, by the way, this interference is going to be... it's going to be more and more widespread because the capabilities are much greater. I mean, when I was in office, social media was just beginning. You know, now you've got a whole industry out there, both that can do these types of attacks or campaigns of disinformation and those who can protect you against it.
And finally, Blair told Ridge why he thought allowing another COVID-inspired lockdown to happen would be a bad idea.
If you think that you can't really go back into lockdown as we were in say, March and April. And I think it's just unrealistic to think we're going to be able to do that.
Why not?
Because I think the economic consequences, even from the lockdown we've had, are so severe. If you go back into another lockdown, I mean, I'm already, you know, horrified by the potential economic damage, even from the lockdown we've done and the loss of confidence. You go back into another big lockdown, no, I think it would be devastating. For the economy. So I think, put it like this, you can't rule out doing it, but it's going to have to be a terrible situation.
That's all for this week. I'm Katie Balls, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily Evening Blend email. It's a free round of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/Evening Blend. Thanks for listening.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.